Ladies and gentlemen, this is a warning. To protect theater owners and the makers of this horror vision film, viewers with nerve or heart conditions are advised to cover their eyes and ears whenever this object appears on the screen or whenever this sound is heard. Thank you.
Help! Help!
Do you believe in evil, in evil powers, thoughts?
I think you've been working here too long.
I can just imagine all those hot numbers hanging around the pool. Yeah. It's gonna be a real bachelor's paradise.
You mean you just made a move with his brain? I'd heard about it, but I only thought that those gurus or whatever on the high mountains could do stuff like that.
Now I shall have your heart forever!
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 61. And this time we're taking you into a house of terror, a house of something or other, with one of Nathan's patented picks. And we're going to be covering the freakout masterpiece that is Boarding House from 1982. But before we get on to that, we're also going to be doing top three killers as well. It's something we surprisingly haven't done in the past. So we're going to be discussing our top three killers. But before we get on to that, let's introduce my fellow house geists. Nathan, as it was your pick, how are you doing? How are you feeling today?
Oh, I feel fantastic.
Okay. Is that because we're going to be talking about Boarding House?
Yes, where the rent won't kill you, but something else will.
Yes, the videotape. Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm very well. Not too hungover, actually.
I'm a little sleepy. I woke up like 2 minutes before the show, but I'm okay.
You're a professional, though, aren't you?
Yeah. The problem is that...
You better be glad you get to sleep that long.
Well, I didn't go to bed till late, but the problem is that for some reason the alarm was set and we never use an alarm, but it went off this morning. I was like, why did the alarm go off at 7 o'clock? So I hit the button to go back to sleep and I didn't just stay awake.
Well, thank you for that.
Consummate professional for Boarding House.
Yes. Well, I think maybe it was your body telling you something, wasn't it?
Yes.
Your internal alarm clock saying, don't get up, don't get up.
For God's sake, don't get up.
Eric, how are you doing?
I am good, thank you. A lovely sunny day here.
Yes, it's lovely
to be
sunny.
To be sitting inside all the windows jammed shut.
I know. It's the same for me because I got somebody recreating the Texas Chainsaw Massacre outside and some kind of power tool frenzy. So there's hammering and drills and everything. So hopefully we won't hear too much of that. But yes, we are going to be covering Boarding House a little bit later. We've got our kind of summer holiday and holiday shenanigans coming up. So we will have news at the end of the show, what we're planning over the next couple of weeks. But we will have a show in some format for you, but we'll tell you about that a little bit later. But before we get on to all of that, let's see what we've been watching recently. Nathan, would you like to go first?
Yes. I watched a new horror comedy called Fresh Meat. I would not recommend it to Eric because, if memory serves, Eric is not a fan of horror comedies. Is that right?
Some of them I think are okay. I love Evil Dead 2. But I hated, what's that one of y'all love? Psycho Beach Party, I didn't like.
Didn't you?
Eric. I remember you saying
that.
How
could you?
Yeah.
Yes. Fresh Meat, it's kind of like the film Blood Massacre, except it's a comedy version of it. It's basically this group of criminals end up taking this family hostage in their home, but what they don't know is that these families are like crazy cannibal serial killers. So it's kind of like a free-for-all. It's like the family versus the criminals, like, in, like, killing each other off. So, I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was, you know, it's not great, but, you know, it's a fun little time waster.
Is it a quite a new film?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it came out maybe last year.
Okay. Yeah, it's from New Zealand.
Right. Mm. Okay. I've not heard of it before, but have you seen it? You haven't seen it, Eric?
No, I haven't. I was just looking it up on IMDb here, okay. And I just see it's from New Zealand, and the family they take hostage are Maori. So.
Oh, right. Well, it could be, so could be interesting. It would be
very, very, very New Zealand. Yes, they're not even trying to mask its New Zealandness.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. What about you, Joseph? Have you seen that?
No, I do have a copy because I was going to watch it, but no, I haven't got around to it yet.
Okay. Anything else, Nathan?
Yeah, I got two more. I also finally watched Grabbers, which I loved. I thought it was like a really, really fun movie. And I think some of you guys have seen
it. Yes, I've seen it.
Yes, Grabbers, yes. Excellent film.
I think we've all seen
it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan. I mean, I thought the idea of having to stay drunk to avoid the creature was inventive.
It was very clever, wasn't it? And it was
yes.
A story.
You'd
of my
be
life.
Safe.
I would. I've never been attacked by a monster, and there is a very good reason for that. I imagine.
I'd be dead. I'd be dead within a minute. I don't drink.
Me too.
Like, but I drink like once a year, so I'd be toast.
God, imagine! Can you imagine that, Eric?
No, I can't even go once a day.
Well, when I turned 21 is when I did all my drinking when it was illegal, and then once I was 21, it wasn't as fun anymore. So I just can't deal with the hangovers anymore.
Yeah, the hangovers aren't good. No. But I don't drink that much anymore to get really bad hangovers.
That was my problem. I didn't know anything about moderation, so I just drank until I passed out.
Okay, all right. Well, that was Grabbers for you, and you had one more for us, Nathan.
Yes, I went and saw The Purge, and okay. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was a great film. It's a serious movie, but it also kind of has an underlying, like, darkly humorous. I mean, it's not a comedy in any way to me, but I kind of saw some dark satire within the idea of Purge Night, and especially at the end. I thought it was a great film, you know, and I'm sure you guys have all heard of it. You know, I mean, I've seen advertisements on TV quite often for it, actually.
Mm.
But, you know, the general idea is it's set in the future, and on one night a year, people are allowed to commit crimes with no repercussions. And this family are locked up for the night with this high-tech security system, but they let a guy in who's being chased by a gang, and the gang basically shows up at the family's house and is like, "Give him to us, we're going to kill you all," which kind of sounds like Assault on Precinct 13, but I mean, really, that's as far as the similarities between those two movies go. But it's really, really entertaining and a tense film. Like, it's got a lot of tense sequences in it, and I thought it was you know, one of the better newer movies I've seen.
Okay, and Joseph, you've seen it as well, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I saw it on opening night, and I loved it as well. It's getting a lot of kind of mixed to bad reviews, and I don't really understand why, although I guess I do kind of understand, because for one, I'm not going to spoil it, but the ending is really offbeat, and I think it would, you know, make a lot of people mad because they expect, you know, the typical just humongous climactic showdown, but it takes a totally different turn. And I kind of appreciated that. And, you know, like Nathan said, it has a lot of, you know, dark humor and satire, which I think, you know, helps the film a lot, and some pretty good performances. Particularly the head bad guy who, is in lead of the purge looking for the guy that gets into the house. He's really kind of frightening. And, Ethan Hawke, not a huge fan of Ethan Hawke, but he does a pretty good job here as the hero. And, really stellar film, I think. When I went to see it, the theater was pretty much sold out, and people were just kind of clapping and laughing and screaming at the appropriate times, and no cell phones were turned on. It was a really great cinema experience. And, you know, finally, I expected the movie to kind of fall by the wayside because I didn't really see many advertisements, but apparently it just like killed the box office this weekend. So you can probably expect a sequel.
Oh, did it? It did well? Did it?
Oh yeah, the opening day was like nearly 20 million, and they're predicting near 40 million for this total weekend.
Okay.
And the budget was 3 million.
Yeah, wow. So there will be a sequel, no doubt. Mm. Yeah.
It's
all quite good.
Yeah, really good. Great. Well, it's worth pointing out that we're recording this a week in advance, so just so you know, just put that into context. And Eric, has it been released in Dublin yet?
It has been. We actually got it a week before the US. It opened last Friday week over here, but I haven't seen it yet.
No, I have not.
But I don't think it did as well. I think I was listening to the Mark Kermode film review podcast this morning, and I think it opened at number 6.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Okay.
But it got a good review, though.
Right, okay. Well, look forward to seeing it. I probably won't see it at the cinema.
Yeah, it's probably one I'll catch on DVD as well, I'd say.
Yes, I think I'm being made to go and see the Liberace movie instead.
That looks quite fun, though.
It does.
I kind of want to see that, no?
But have you seen it, Nathan?
No, but I just can't imagine. I'd rather go see The Perfect.
I think you would want to see it.
Well, it looks like it could be kind of fun.
Yeah, no? It does. I mean, it looks like it could be quite horrific in a completely different type of way, but... well, thank you for that, Nathan. Was that all the three you've seen? Was there something else?
No, that's it.
That's it. Okay, well, thank you. Eric, what have you been watching?
Okay, I watched a film called The Ordeal, which is a Belgian-French, I think, co-production from 2004. It's kind of like an art house version of Misery, I suppose. It's about a psychotic farmer who holds this singer hostage. The singer's car breaks down in the middle of the countryside. What do I say about the film? I mean, it's very well made, but I wasn't in the mood for that type of film when I watched it, but I just wasn't entertained by it at all, I have to say. You know, I'm not too enthused in the first place about kind of hostage-type movies. I mean, I thought it was going to be a far more thrilling movie than it turned out to be. As I said, it's kind of arthousey. You know, they have these very far-fetched elements to the plot, like the farmer and all the townsfolk as well seem to think that this guy is the reincarnation, or he is this farmer's ex-wife Gloria who ran out on him. So all the local, there's a scene actually that's horrific and yet funny at the same time, where all the locals sort of bum him against his will, but there's also a scene where they're bumming a calf. I've got to stop saying bumming a lot. It does at times veer into Texas Chainsaw Massacre territory, so maybe you guys might appreciate it a bit more than I do, but because there is a scene where the captive and his captors are all sitting around a table and there's just nothing but nonstop screaming for what felt like about 10 minutes. It's probably a lot shorter than that, but yeah, I think because I watched it straight after another film that I'm about to talk about, which was much more of a straightforward horror. So maybe I just wasn't the right atmosphere to be watching it in. But yeah, The Ordeal didn't do a lot for me, I have to say.
Okay. I have seen that. Was it Calvaire, The Ordeal?
Yes, I've seen that.
Yes, Calvaire is the original title, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember much about it, but I saw that quite a few years ago.
So, Eric, you are saying it's an ordeal?
I am. Well, I wouldn't say it was an ordeal to watch. I just found myself a bit bored by it, to be honest.
Man, these jokes just write themselves.
Making that guy wear a dress.
Yes, they do make him wear a dress because they think he is Gloria. Yes, for some reason. Well, anyway, the film I watched previous to that, and I think Joseph and Nathan saw this one as well, was VHS 2.
Yes.
Which I thought was a pretty decent sequel. It slimmed down to 4 stories this time, along with the wraparound. 2 of which were really, really good, I thought, and 2 of which were decent. There's one standout sequence for me was this Japanese cult episode, which just felt like a juggernaut. It just kept getting more and more absurd and outlandish and more gruesome and horrific. I mean, it made absolutely no sense, but, you know, what it felt like was a depiction of hell transposed onto, well, not celluloid, onto VHS, as it were. I think it's very effective. The final episode is one about an alien invasion, which I thought was, at the start, looked like it was going to be the best one, but it doesn't really go anywhere, and it's marred by a bit too much shaky cam and too many superimposed VHS damage effects onto the screen, which were really bugging me at the time. So I didn't really have any surprises. But overall, I'd say all four films are of a pretty good quality. I mean, I'm probably the one who liked the first VHS movie the most out of the four of us. I thought there were at least three segments in it that I thought were pretty good. But this one is much more consistent. And yeah, I really liked it. The first episode as well, the one about the guy with the bionic eye that sort of videos everything he does. That is, again, like the Alien Invasion one, starts out really well, but it doesn't feel like they had any clue how to end the segment. But I'd say a big thumbs up for VHS 2.
Okay. I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't been released here.
Has it been released in Bristol yet now?
No, not yet. Joseph and Nathan, because didn't it play? Well, it's
video on demand.
Yeah, video on demand.
Yeah. And as far as VHS 2, I really loved it a lot more than the first one. It does have its problems. For one, the wraparound story is a little more focused here, but it doesn't really give you any concrete evidence of what's really going on and why these people have these tapes. But it's a little more focused this time. The first story with the bionic eye, like Eric said, it starts out well, but it kind of meanders. And it's directed by Adam Wingard, and he also stars in it. And he did A Horrible Way to Die, which was terrible. And he's doing the upcoming Your Next, which I really want to see. But him as the lead guy, I felt was really off. He was pretty bad. I thought, you know, his narration was just like he was reading a script, and it kind of took me out of it. But it was still a decent story. The second story with the bike ride through the woods, I really loved that. It was short and to the point. I mean, it was pretty much over in a flash, but it was just kind of, you know, hyper violent and just a lot of fun. And I love the ending with the I won't spoil it, but the ending where the action takes place it's kind of mean-spirited, but it's funny at the same time. I really enjoyed that. The third story
that was directed by Eduardo Sanchez, I forgot to point out.
Yeah, the second one.
Or co-directed by.
The third one was directed by Gareth Evans, who did The Raid, The Redemption, or I think that was what it's called. But it's the longest of the stories, and I think it was Indonesian. It wasn't Japanese. Was that right?
Oh, sorry.
Eric?
Sorry, yeah.
I think it might have been Indonesia. I could be wrong, but it is the best of the stories. And like Eric said, it just completely just goes balls to the wall. I mean, it does not stop. And it's just so just out there and outlandish and just so gory and violent and crazy. I mean, some of the stuff that happens in this story is just you're like, I can't believe this is happening. It is the best of the four.
Although it now is marred, it's marred somewhat slightly by a very graphic snot scene.
Yeah, it's worse than the Blair Witch.
Worse than the Blair Witch. Scene. I thought I was going to barf.
But I do love that final shot of that thing. That thing is creepy.
Mm.
Yeah. The fourth story, like Eric said, it's a little too much shaky cam. It has a couple of good scenes. One scene I really liked in the fourth story is at the very beginning, all the kids that were pretty much focused on, they're at the lake and they're swimming and having a good time. And one kid's got a camera on his head and he's like playing with a water pistol and he's like shooting everybody. And he goes underwater. And the second he goes underwater, you get like a quick glimpse of, I guess, the threat that's going to show up later. And it really freaked me out. I mean, I didn't see it coming and it almost made me jump. And I loved that scene. There is the ending to the story is getting a lot of kind of bad press because I won't spoil what happens, but it's something to do with an animal. But it didn't really bother me as much because it wasn't like human cruelty related. It was just kind of like bad luck. So it wasn't as graphic as I thought it was going to be. So it didn't really bother me. But anyway, overall, yeah, VHS 2, I really liked it a lot.
Okay. Nathan, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was much, much better than part one. I wasn't the biggest fan of part one. I thought it was just okay. But I did really love part two. And I agree that I think the second and third stories are the best, with the third story being, you know, like the best of the whole thing. The cult sequence, I mean, it's just... it's a great short story. Like, I could actually watch that feature length if it was a feature length movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think it would have been good that way. And I am one of the people that does not like the way the fourth story ends, the final shot. I mean, and to me, the main reason I dislike it is I think it could have not even shown it, and it wouldn't have changed the story at all.
Yeah, it's not really necessary. It's not really necessary, but at the same time, it wasn't as terrible as I thought it was going to be.
I mean, it's not like somebody like killing animals or anything, but it's just, if it's not necessary, then just don't bother with it, you know? I mean, I'm just not a big fan of animals dying in movies, period. I'm just saying.
There's something else unnecessary in VHS 2 is that you get to see a man's big long winkle at the very start.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Was it just gratuitous, was it?
Oh, it's a gratuitous and degrading to men.
Okay. Yes. Well,
I
shall make sure to look out for that so I can tut at the right place.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I shall look forward to VHS 2. I'm sure I shall be seeing it soon. Mm-hmm. I've kind of lost track of where we are. Who's
that's all from me for that's recently seeing, because it's only been a week. But apparently, Joseph has just been sitting in a cinema or in front of his Blu-ray all week.
Yes.
Yeah, I have. I saw The Purge in VHS too, but I also saw a movie called Amber Lake, which is basically about these three girls who get invited to this summer vacation home by a guy who turns out to be their long lost father, and they don't even know that they're related, and all of their names are Amber for some strange reason. But basically, the father has invited them up there to kind of work through their psychological issues because he's a psychiatrist, and I guess he's kind of kept tabs on them, and he knows that they kind of suffer from different ailments of the mind. But they get up there and they kind of, get to know one another. And through the whole movie, they have the same name. So you're thinking, okay, are they going to pull this this twist out that's pretty much like every other movie? But they don't do that, surprisingly. And I kind of liked it. It's a little flat in the acting territory and it's kind of slow. But I think the ending of this film saves it, which I won't spoil, but it goes in a direction I didn't see, and it's a pretty neat little twist to kind of cap off the movie. It's kind of humorous in a way, kind of darkly humorous, but I wouldn't say go see it, but if you happen to see it and you have nothing else to do, it's worth one watch.
Okay, not heard of that one.
No,
but basically, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that they get up there and, he starts kind of, trying to figure out why they're so messed up in the head, but he ends up dying and his body is found in the lake. So the premise of the movie is you got to figure out which Amber killed him, because the movie's called Amber Lake. But like I said, it takes a kind of a neat twist at the end.
Okay, right. Okay, well, that sounds good. Anything else?
Yeah, three more. I watched last night. I watched Warm Bodies, which is the kind of zombie horror comedy about. Well, basically, for some strange reason, it's never really said, but zombies are pretty much just kind of roaming the earth. There's like two types of zombies. One is like the one that had just been turned not too long ago, and so they still have some human characteristics to them. But then there's these other like skeletal ones that are they do nothing but want to eat people. And basically, it follows this one guy who's kind of conflicted about being a zombie, and he meets this girl, and he kind of falls in love with her, and she, eventually falls in love with him. And all the adverts and reviews I've read pretty much painted it as this kind of, I guess you'd say, a hipster, oh, look how clever we are comedy. But I was really surprised by this movie. I thought it was really kind of, it was really funny in a lot of places, but it's also kind of, it's almost kind of touching and kind of uplifting in a weird kind of way, and I kind of enjoyed that about it. It's kind of unusual, and like I said, it does kind of make fun of the zombie, genre a lot, and as sick as I am of zombie films, I actually thought this was quite good and quite a unique spin on the whole zombie film. It kind of reminded me of, it has that kind of Return of the Living Dead 3 angle with zombies in love, but it kind of takes it up a notch in kind of an interesting way here.
Okay, I saw the trailer. I haven't seen it yet. Anyone else?
It's a surprise. Yeah, it's a surprise. Yeah. I was surprised at it.
No, I haven't seen it, but it did get quite good reviews, actually, when it opened here in the cinema. Directed by the same guy who did All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, which I quite liked. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. What about you, Nathan? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Well, it's one to look out for. So thank you, Joseph. And what's your other two? I know you... I know you saw the chainsaw in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw Texas Chainsaw 3D, and I was pretty much prepared for the worst. But, you know, the first hour of this movie, I was like, why are people kind of downing on this? This is great. Mm. First hour is just, you know, typical slasher film, just kind of turned up a notch. And, you know, there's lots of chase scenes and lots of really gory, like, death scenes. I was like, this is pretty good. But man, does this movie shoot itself in the foot at the last 30 minutes? I mean, sometimes you can kind of overlook a film's ending if the previous hour was good. But even here, the ending is so bad and it gets so nonsensical that it actually ruins what you'd seen previously. It turns from a slasher movie into this kind of, you know, Hatfield versus the McCoy territory, and it does not work. For one, it doesn't really make sense when you consider that the main character, the main girl, she basically kind of, sympathizes with Leatherface, and she has no real reason to. I mean, I won't go into specific spoilers, but once you see it, you'll understand why, because she's not crazy through the whole film, so there's no foreshadowing or anything that she might have a screw loose. And, I was willing to overlook all the stupid, you know, corny dialogue and bad acting, but the story turn it takes at the end is just so bad, and the timeline is all messed up. I mean, you get this sheriff and this mayor who were present at the scene of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was in 73, I want to say, and or 74, 73, I think. But and they never seem to age in 40 years, because this takes place in modern times, because they have like smartphones and stuff. And in 73, this baby is abducted, and then she shows up in modern times, and the actress is probably no more than 23 years old, yet if you go by the timeline, she should be about 40. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
Slasher movie in not make sense, shocker.
Well, no, this is worse than most slasher films, because they don't even blatantly try to hide it. It's like they messed up. They're like, uh-oh. Maybe no one will notice something like that, but it's just so, it takes you out of the film. You're like, wait a minute. Yeah.
I did love the scene in the fairground. I thought that was...
That was awesome. I mean, like I said, the first hour, you know, when he's got them in the house and he's, you know, picking them off one by one, then he chases her into the carnival. That was just great. I was like, man, if they could just keep this momentum going, this could be a really good film.
Yeah.
But it takes that turn. Wow. What a turn.
Yes. So, well, I think we've all seen that now. So,
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? No.
That's why I was kind of trying to be a little vague with the spoilers. Yeah. But
okay. Well, fair enough.
It really shits all over the original with that, especially with that ending.
I can't believe Nathan used a rude word.
I know.
I was very upset because you know that the original is my favorite movie of all time.
I'm
very, very upset. I heard the buzzer.
Yeah.
I'm very, very upset, especially at just how ridiculous and stupid the twist is with the heroine. I'm like, it makes zero sense, her about face.
Mind you, Nathan, be careful, because we're going to be talking about Boarding House shortly.
Yeah, but at least hey, you're talking about a movie that had a budget of $10,000 versus a movie that had a budget of millions. That plays a huge part.
Boarding House logic. Cost $10,000.
Did it?
Yes.
Where did the money go?
To special effects.
To his underwear supply.
Yes.
Right. Well, we shall be coming, not quite literally, but we'll be coming on to Boarding House in a little while. Joseph, what was that? You got one more, haven't you?
Yeah, I finally, after all these years, watched Alone in the Dark from 1982, okay. Shelter film.
Mm.
And I quite liked it. I was a little disappointed in some of the – it tries to be kind of cutesy comical in a couple places, and I thought it felt kind of out of place with how kind of wacky the characters act, you know, amidst all this kind of nightmarish stuff going on. But, you know, I felt all the kind of slasher, you know, home invasion stuff was really well done. And what's his name, Dwight Schultz, who was the lead in the film. He was also in the A-Team. I thought he did a fairly good job as the kind of hero. And it has some good, you know, effective kind of boo moments I liked a lot. I did guess the twist with the bleeder. I thought that was so obvious. I mean, the whole time I'm sitting there screaming the twist at the screen, and I'm like, please prove me wrong. Please prove me wrong. And they did not prove me wrong. But, yeah, it was a pretty fun film. I'm glad I finally saw it.
Excellent. Okay. Any other comments from Nathan and Eric on Alone in the Dark, or are we going to leave that for...
Yeah, well, it's been so long since I've seen it that I can't really remember much. So,
I would love to cover on the podcast at some point. I will say I love the scene where the teenage girl is on the bed getting menaced.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well,
that scene kind of bugged me a little bit because she just sits there. She doesn't try to run. She just sits there and like kind of, you know, whimpers. If it were me, I mean, any normal person, if they saw that happen, for one, you know, he gets drugged under the bed and she's just like, Rick or whatever his name is, like kind of so nonchalant. And then when the knife starts coming through the bed, she's just like sitting there. I mean, most normal people would get up and jump and run away, but I don't know. It's still a pretty decent scene, I guess.
But again, you know, when you're talking to slasher movies, most normal people wouldn't walk outside on a pitch black night being, is anybody out there?
I would.
Yes.
In just your pants.
Yeah, in just my underwear. Yeah.
In your thong.
Yeah, in my thong.
Leopard print.
Yes. Again, foreshadowing what is to come.
Yes, not literally, though.
Yay.
Well, thank you, Joseph. I just kind of rattle through. I haven't seen much this week. As I say, it's only been a week since we recorded. But funnily enough, I watched, it's not a horror movie, but we touched on the director, one of the directors of VHS 2. I watched The Raid yesterday, which is the kind of Indonesian sort of action, sort of violent action movie, directed by Gareth Evans, is it, the Welshman? So it's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what the story was, why a Welshman ended up directing a kind of violent siege movie. It was kind of a siege movie. It's also incredibly similar to Dread. I don't know if you saw Dread, you know, the Judge Dread movie.
No, but I've heard the comparisons, yeah.
It came out before Dread, didn't it?
I haven't looked into it, but it's kind of, essentially the story is there's a load of police go into a massive apartment block where there's a kind of a drug lord at the top of the building. He controls the whole building, and they have to get to him through the flats, and all the residents there are kind of like in the pay of the drug lord. So they're basically, they get ambushed, and they're just like it's basically non-stop kind of, not kung fu, but martial arts and gunfire and violence and machete, people being chop, you know, lots of limbs flying, and sort of it's really gory and violent. It's very good. It's incredibly well done. I definitely recommend it. Has any of you seen it?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I thought it was very, very entertaining. It reminded me of Ricky O in an apartment complex, or the story of Ricky,
yeah,
about the guy who gets sent to prison, because it's kind of that hyper gory, just nonstop action and just kind of over the top, and it was just really well directed, and it's really breezy. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't really overstay its welcome.
No, it's kind of, I like the way you describe it as breezy. It sort of sounds like a fashion, like a sort of like a picnic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as in a quick pace.
Yes.
I mean, there's always something happening.
Have you seen Dread?
No, I had a copy, and I was going to watch it, but I got kind of sidetracked, and I never got to it. But I've heard it's really good.
It is excellent. I thought it was really, really good. It was some of the best 3D I've ever seen. The 3D was really, really good. But the story is almost identical to The Raid, but it's definitely worth seeing.
Have you seen it? Making a sequel to The Raid, right?
Are they?
Yeah, it's coming out next year, I think. I believe. I could be wrong, but
right. Okay, oh, interesting. And what about you guys? Have any of you, Eric? Have you seen The Raid or Dread?
No, but I did go to see. I went to see Shogun Assassin, which had an introduction by a pre-recorded introduction by Gareth Evans. Apparently, it was a season of films that influenced The Raid, and that was one of them. But I didn't actually get to see The Raid itself. But I am intrigued, and Dread as well. It can't be any worse than Judge Dredd, surely, with Slice.
No.
Dredd is fantastic. It really, really is good. I definitely recommend watching it. What about you, Nathan? Have you seen either of those?
I haven't seen any of the films that you guys are mentioning.
Okay, right. Well, that's some homework for you. My last film I watched on video on demand, and I was surprised to see it on there, and I'd never seen it before. It's a film called Primal Rage from 1988, directed by Carla Rambaldi's son.
I believe it's on Netflix here.
Mm. It's from Eric, have you ever seen it?
No, but
you would love it. You would love it, and you would, Nathan, as well. Have you seen it? It's the one. It's got the lead is Rob Lowe's brother, Patrick Lowe.
And, I love when there's someone famous's brother or sister in the movie.
Starring Patrick Lowe. Yeah.
But the story,
the
story
also in the Slumber Party Massacre too.
Yes, but it's basically what's quite interesting is that it's a story of it's on a campus. And it goes, the last 20 minutes, a pure slasher movie as well. I'll just point that out. But it's essentially there's the kind of the crack newspaper team on the campus go, the editor wants to find out about the animal experiments that, what's his name, Bo Svensson, who plays the professor, is undertaking. He has a monkey, which is kind of created by Carlo Rambaldi, who obviously did King Kong, and he's got loads of electrodes, but he's basically got kind of like a rage virus, and he gets bitten, this reporter gets bitten by the monkey who escapes, and he starts getting taken over by this rage virus, and he starts kind of bleeding, and his temples keep popping, like veins pop out, and he starts attacking people. So in one way, it's very similar to something like Rabid, the Cronenberg's Rabid, but also it's kind of very much kind of foreshadowing 28 Days Later, you know, with the rage virus. But it all happens on a campus, and it's just ahead of a Halloween party, and everyone who gets bitten suddenly becomes this kind of like half living zombie, violent, kind of attacking people. And there's this three kind of real jock kind of assholes who try and rape this woman who's got the rage virus, and she attacks them all, beats them all up and bites them all, and they go to the Halloween party dressed in these really cool kind of skull masks and dress as skeletons, and they're at the Halloween ball and everyone's masked up, and the Rob Lowe and the woman who's there being chased around the campus by these kind of these three in these kind of skull masks, and it just turns into a complete slasher movie the last 20 minutes. So I definitely recommend that, and it's got loads of kind of 80s kind of bands and leotards and people doing aerobics and all that kind of stuff. Ooh. Which I thought Eric would really like.
I gotta see this. I think it's on Netflix. I'm gonna watch it if it is.
I'm just looking at it on IMDb. It's written by Umberto Lenzi.
It is, yes.
So there's a stamp of approval if ever I saw one.
It's really good fun. I thought it was. I hadn't seen it, and it screams. It's that. It's an Italian. It's an Italian exploitation horror, teen horror movie made in Florida, and with all that entails, both good and bad. So yeah, definitely worth a watch.
Mm.
So yes.
Oh, is that it?
Is that
Netflix?
It?
No, it's not on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, I'm sure you can find it.
I'm sure you can still find it.
I'm sure Baby Jesus will bestow it on you. So I think we shall move on now to our top three. Daddy! Okay, well, to get started on our top three killers, well, before we do that, what we should say is we purposely decided not to go for Jason, Freddy and Michael, just because it's a bit too obvious. And we'll be talking, you know, we talked at length about them anyway in respective shows, and I'm sure given all the sequels, we'll be talking a lot more about them. So, Eric, do you want to go first? What's your number three?
Okay, well, my number three, I think I probably mentioned her before. It's the wonderful Rebecca Gayheart as the villain, oops, spoiler alert, in Urban Legend. It's just purely, not anything really to do with her method of dispatching, you know, her victims right then, but it's the way that she goes from, you know, this innocent kind of ditzy teenager to wide-eyed psychopathic killer. Like her performance in the last 10-15 minutes really reminded me of Betsy Palmer in places. It's for that. It's for sort of this really kitschy, deliberately so, I think, over the top performance that she gives when it's revealed she is the killer. So that's why she
is
my
Betsy Palmer has the teeth and Rebecca Gayheart has the eyes
and the hair
and the hair
and the hair
sides. Yeah, the hair.
I actually really like Rebecca Gayheart. I'd love to see her in more stuff, but has she kind of disappeared, or am I just not watching enough movies?
Didn't she end up like killing someone in a car accident and it kind of hurt her?
She's done movies since then.
I don't know.
Let's have a look anyway.
Yeah, I think
yes. So big hair, big eyes.
Fair enough. That's yes. Also, you know, the higher the hair, the closer to hell or heaven or
as whatever. We're going to learn with our upcoming
indeed
presentation.
Oh, indeed, gosh, we
yes.
are.
Oh gosh, yes. Has anyone else got anything to say about Rebecca Gayheart and her Looney Tunes portrayal?
I picked one of her monologues from Urban Legend in an earlier episode, which I thought was just kind of over the top, kind of fun and bad. So, yeah, she's a lot of fun. She's not a very consistent actor, I'd say, but yeah, she is a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, I like her. I like when she goes ding 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 at the end. Because one of the very first DVDs I bought was Urban Legend, and when you click onto the German language track, the ding 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 is translated to click 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 click, which is bizarre. I mean, surely ding ding would kind of mean the same thing in Germany, I would think.
But you would have thought so, wouldn't you?
I quite enjoyed her calling the heroine Miss Thang.
Yeah.
Luckily, I brought a slideshow.
Yeah, I know. It's very convenient.
Awesome.
And all those candles and everything, yeah.
Excellent.
Where did she get the power for that, I wonder?
Very long extension
cord. The director mentions that in his commentary. Like, he seems like an awesome guy, but in the commentary for Urban Legend, I think he even brings up, where did she get power from? Like, even he realizes it's, you know, goofy.
She brought a slideshow and she brought a generator.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
She was prepared.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Eric. And Joseph, do you want to give us your number three?
Yeah, my number three is Bubba from Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. Mm. And I picked him for a couple of reasons. One, he does have that scary scarecrow mask, which is kind of with the giant holes for the eyes and the mouth. So it kind of, you can see his eyes in a lot of places. So it kind of has that creepy look. But I also picked him because he's kind of a tragic character. I mean, he's just this mentally handicapped guy who gets, you know, unjustly killed, and he comes back to kind of avenge his death. So he's one of the killers you actually had sympathy for, because the people who killed him were total, you know, just sociopaths who deserved to die. So, yeah, he's got that, you know, that whole you root for him kind of card going. So that's why I picked him.
Mm, okay. Well, that seems fair enough. I do like the juxtaposition between him as a kind of simple and sweet kind of character and the kind of like the creepy kind of, you know, basically no dialogue killer that he becomes. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it was him playing, because there was close ups, wasn't there, of his eye, as you say, but I wonder if he played the killer in a lot of shots, because I was just watching the Burning. I finally got the Blu-ray through from Shout Factory. And I was watching. Is it Lou David who played Cropsey?
Yeah,
I think it was, wasn't it? And he was sort of saying that a lot of the killing scenes, including the on the raft, wasn't him. So,
I've heard it was Tom Savini, wasn't it?
Probably was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he admitted that. So, but I just wondered in the same way that probably I don't know how you know, popular an actor he was back then, but they, you know, he probably was a face. So, you know, they may not have been able to afford him for, you know, all those kind of scenes, perhaps. I don't know.
So, well, I don't think he'd done much. I know he'd done, what's that movie? The one with Bruce Leroy, The Last Dragon.
Okay.
He had like a bit part in that, and I think that's all he'd done. I'm not sure, but I think that's what I'd read.
Okay. Right. Okay. Was anything else to say
on that? He'd been in The Fury as well.
Okay.
And the Muppet movie. Sorry, I'm looking on IMDb again. I'm cheating a bit, but
you are. Yeah. Yes. Well, we know what you're like, Eric, when it comes
to. He was in Sisters, The Sting. He was in a lot of stuff before.
Okay.
Yeah, you always have IMDb ready, especially when it comes to the quizzes.
Oh, yes. I do not. You take that back.
Inga's claws. You know,
now we're going to have another quiz soon, just so we can torment Eric.
Exactly.
You see, I told you were the bullies.
Oh, Eric.
Taste your own medicine.
So, okay, well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, what's your number three?
Oh, my number three is Frank from the Maniac remake that just came out recently. I loved the movie, and I think that the way they portrayed Frank in this film was excellent. And no offense to Joe Spinell, I mean, he's fantastic in the original Maniac, but I just love the turn they took with him in this movie. You know, they went a little deeper into Frank's, you know, background, and, you know, I love the fact that, you know, it's, you know, I don't think he really enjoys the killing. It's like he can't stop himself from doing it. And I don't know, I kind of thought that made him kind of frightening. You know, that he just happens to see somebody and it's like, he's going to have to kill her. You know, I love the direction they took with it. And I think Elijah Wood, who I had very big doubts about playing this role, was absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I've still not seen it.
No,
I know
neither.
Joseph fan.
So I would agree with him. I think the Maniac remake is just a superb film. It's one of the best. It's probably one of the best films I've seen this year. Elijah Wood is so good in this role. Like I mentioned before, he's more where Joe Spinell is more just kind of a sleaze bag. You know, you seem to kind of like the killing. You know, Elijah Wood's character, Frank. He's more of a kind of a schizophrenic kind of a. I guess you wouldn't call him a creep. You'd call him kind of pathetic because he really has no control over this, and he does a really good job. And he's more normal looking. I mean, he's not as – he's kind of creepy looking, but at the same time, you could understand why someone – you know, some beautiful girl would kind of latch onto him, whereas you couldn't really buy that with the Joe Spinell character.
I know. Well, Joe Spinell, that was always the kind of criticism, wasn't it, of him and Carolyn Monroe. You can never quite get your head around that. So
you guys should really see the Maniac remake. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Okay. Yeah, well, definitely we'll get around to it at some point, I'm sure. So, Nathan, is there anything else you want to say about your number three pick?
All I want to say is the part that really, like, bugged me about the Maniac remake is when they would show him scrubbing his hands with, like, this steel, like, Brillo-type pad, and he would scrub them till they bled. Hmm. Ow.
Yeah, it looked painful.
Fair enough. Okay, well, thank you for that. My number three is, this is kind of like a nod of appreciation to all the silent killers. And my number three is a killer in The Prowler. Because I like The Prowler, but I think it's a bit of a flawed film. But I think the killer's get up, the kind of soldier get up, is really, really effective and quite scary. And I do love that whole not actually having any kind of face almost, because it's kind of just gauze, or not gauze, but like material over there with the kind of the soldier's garb. And I just kind of I just really like that. And that's the silent, you know, the silent boogeyman, which is obviously typified by Michael Myers, but I thought it was done really, really well in The Prowler. And I say The Prowler does have its problems. It's not my favourite slasher movie by a long shot, but I do appreciate it. And I think when it's good, it's very, very good. And when it's lacking, it's lacking, basically. But my number three is a killer from The Prowler. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like the idea of the killer wearing this sand mask that they wear in like deserts during the war when it gets all sandstormy and stuff to keep the sand out of their face. I think that's an unusual choice for a mask. I like the addition of the rose when he's going to kill someone, you can see him like holding up a rose. I think that's kind of, it's got that bright red that kind of goes against that dark army green. I think that works really well there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Any other thoughts, or should we move on to that pesky cat?
Oh, I think it's time for the pesky cat.
Pesky cat.
Yes.
Okay, well, Eric, you come back in after this and tell us what is your big number two. Okay.
Okay, my big number two is Mr. Nudie from 10 to Midnight. I can't remember what the character's called, so I'm just going to call him Mr. Nudie. He's the killer who likes to go around killing people with no clothes on. Well, he's got no clothes on. The people he kills probably do. And he also uses the forbidden C word just to prove how evil he is. You know,
chicken?
That's actually
candy?
A forbidden C word. That's actually a forbidden C word in Justin's house.
What candy?
Chicken.
Yes.
Yeah. But just I just love the idea of running around naked killing people. Not personally, I don't want to do it myself. I just think it's such an absurd idea, especially for a mainstream Charles Bronson movie. I think it's particularly silly.
Remember, Eric, what the comments we got after the last show. So be careful about what you say.
We didn't get any comments about the last show.
We did about Eric's picks about your misanthropic picks. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Decapitating lions and stuff.
Yes.
Only the hand drawn ones. I'm actually a pacifist when it comes to animals.
Yeah. Right. Okay. But you don't mind running around naked killing people?
No, I'd love to do that for a living.
Yeah. Do you reckon there'd be
many fun of that poor, simple-minded Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think there'd be many openings for you if you were running around naked?
I'd need a really large opening, though.
Yes, yeah. You would. You would. Yes. So.
Oh, he took you there. He took you there.
Did.
I do apologize, Eric. Yeah. But thank you
Play
for
the
that.
Cat again. I want to hear the cat.
You want to hit the cat? Okay. Well, Joseph, you come in after this one. Okay, Joseph.
All right. My number two is, like Justin, it's a film I don't really... I think it's okay, but I think it has problems. It's Cropsey from The Burning. And the reason why I picked him is because, you know, the movie's just okay to me, but Cropsey, I think, is a really good villain. He's, you know, dressed in all black, and he's got those shears, and he's all burnt, and he's very, very just unrelenting in his killing. I mean, it starts out with him killing that prostitute with the scissors. It's just so, you know, kind of graphic and violent. And then, of course, you get that famous raft scene where he kills like five people at once. And I like Cropsey because he's kind of he's the atypical, you know, boogeyman of the summer camp that no one really tries to speak of because he might still be out there. But I think they did a good job of making a perfect, just a typical slasher movie villain. And I love the whole final scene with the showdown between him and Todd and Alfred in the old abandoned mine. It's just, you really get to see him go to work there as well. I think he's just a good killer in just an okay film.
Okay. But he's not naked.
No, well his head is.
I know something interesting about Cropsey. I don't know if you've heard this. But he's a fucking Big Mac overdone.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
What's this? Oh. This potty mouth.
That's my first bit of potty mouthness.
Hmm. Okay.
It was Nathan earlier.
You're a fucking liar.
I have my finger on the trigger.
Bottom.
Ooh, it's quite strict today.
Yeah, he's very strict today.
Mm-hmm.
What? I can't say bottom.
I think enough with the buzzer. That's it's getting on my fucking nerves. So, what? So Cropsey, yes, I think it's a very good choice. Very good choice. And I did notice on the interview of Lou David, he was saying that he would like to come back for a Burning 2, although he had some idea of he's saying something like some protozoa or something had fallen off Cropsey and grown into a new one, which I think was probably stretching it a bit. So I'm not quite
sure.
He's
on drugs, man. He's got wacky ideas, man.
Well, they must have, because they obviously didn't even think about doing a sequel, did they? Because they couldn't really have brought Cropsey back, could they, after that, what they do to him at the end. That would be a thing. Having said that, Victor Crowley, another killer kind of modelled on the 80s slash movies with the Hatchet movies. I couldn't really see how they could bring him back from the second one, but they obviously are. So
yeah, they bring him back with some lame throwaway line like he just can't die because he's already a ghost or something.
I don't think slasher sequels need to explain themselves, really, do they? I mean, Freddy is brought back to life by some dog urinating in Dream Master.
That is true. Okay, well, anything, Nathan, have you got anything to say about Cropsey?
I like The Shears.
Okay, well, thank you. And Nathan, it's your turn for a little cat action. Okay, Nathan, what's your big number two?
My number two is Angela from the Sleepaway Camp series. Mm. I mean, I really like her.
Her?
I am referring to... Well, I mean, in the sequels, it's a her.
She has a woo-woo.
In the original. So, I mean, you know, I say I like him in part one, and I like her in two and three. I'm not even going to mention four. As far as Angela in part one, I think that most of the people that get killed, they kind of deserve it in the first one. So I mean, I was kind of rooting for Angela, to be honest. And as far as her in two and three goes, I just think she's really funny in those movies, so I like her.
Mm. Which would be your favorite Angela?
I don't really have a favorite Angela because I think they both did fantastic jobs playing that character in different ways. Mm. But I like the Sleepaway Camp sequels better than the first one, though. I will say that.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. Any other thoughts on Angela in Sleepaway Camp?
She has She's a very awesome. Small winkle.
Hmm. Yes, and it's a film I imagine we will be getting around to fairly soon. And that's all I will say.
We must, yes.
Yes. Anything else, Nathan, on your number two?
Long live Angela.
Okay, great. Well, okay, here's a little cat for me. Okay, well, for me, for my big number two, it's quite tricky, really, because we're up to, what's it, the 61st show, so we are at risk, obviously, of repeating ourselves quite often. But then again, we're talking...
We already have. Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yes.
But we're talking about slasher movies, which exist on repetition, and that is part of their charm. So I'm going right back to the beginning of The Hysteria Continues. I'm going back to episode one. And the killer in Happy Birthday to Me. For the reasons behind that are twofold. One is I love the look of the killer, because you don't really see the killer. Well, you do see the killer, you don't see the killer. And if you haven't seen the film, I'm not going to spoil it too much for you. But it plays out like a giallo in some ways, that the killer's got black leather gloves. But wears white sneakers as well, which I always thought was probably not... not the best sort of footwear when you're killing people, I wouldn't have thought.
I would say it would be. It would be good for running.
It's more practical.
Maybe they were black or something, though.
But more practical than a pair of Jimmy Choo's.
That is true, but it wouldn't be very good for blood splatters or anything like that. If you're, true. You
or
know,
camouflage,
so,
yeah, camouflage. Yeah.
For camouflage. So, but also, I love the denouement or denouement of the film. Well, the end of the film with the big reveal of who the actual killer is. And I love those kind of twists, and see like a film like The Initiation, and where the killer does essentially Rebecca Gayheart. And I kind of always thought actually the Rebecca Gayheart's kind of demented kind of monologue at the end of Urban Legend was kind of half based on a similar one at the end of Happy Birthday to Me. And I've just bought the off eBay, actually, the double bill, the double Blu-ray with this and When a Stranger Calls, which I think, did someone call in about that? Or
Johnny
was talking about it, wasn't he? Yeah, so I picked that up off eBay for about £5 or £6, so pretty cheap. But I should have that next week so I can feed back. Yes. What?
I won't say it, I'm sorry.
What? I missed.
I was going to say, it's here first, Justin. I have to send it to you.
Oh, God. Oh, fuck's sake. yeah, well, that's my pick. I don't know if any... I know you probably have talked Happy Birthday to Me into the ground several times before, but any thoughts on that?
It was just our first.
Shish kebab.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I've still got my happy birthday to me one sheet downstairs in Pride of Place at the bottom of the stairs since my birthday, because I was allowed to put that up there. So now it's still there, and I'm waiting until I'm told to take it down. So then I might replace it with my new Pieces poster instead, which would be even more popular, I'm sure. So,
what's on the Pieces poster? Is it the...
It's the chainsaw one with the woman lying on the block with the massive chainsaw behind her.
Oh, yeah. Very
so,
good.
Yes. Yes, it's my pension, as I keep on telling people. Okay, right. Well, that is our number two. So we're going to get on to our big number ones. Eric, who is your top number, numero uno killer?
Okay, my number one killer is Invisible. He's the boogeyman from Uli Lamel's 1980 video Nasty. Well, he is kind of visible. You do see him. He's the embodiment of this guy who wears woman's tights on his head. He gets kudos from me for the inventive way he kills people. You know, he uses skewers, a shish kebab, scissors, pitchforks, but he makes number one for me for killing the obnoxious little brother. Again, this is harking back maybe to my last week's top three a bit too closely, but I love the way the little brother is knocked off, because normally you don't see kids getting killed in slasher movies. Although his death scene is hilariously pathetic, because he just sticks his head through a window frame and he just gets gently tapped on the neck by the closing window, but we assume he's been killed. So yeah, the boogeyman, big thumbs up from me. He could live in my mirror any day.
Well, I kind of, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I imagine the makers of Boarding House watched The Boogeyman, didn't they?
Yes, there are
Boogeyman
elements.
Boarding House was The Boogeyman.
Ooh, okay, controversial.
I haven't seen The Boogeyman.
You haven't seen The Boogeyman?
No.
Really?
I haven't seen it in a long time.
I guess that's it's mirror-tastic.
Yes.
Is it something I should seek out then?
I think so.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, considering it's Uli Lommel, who is basically doesn't make good films anymore, then The Boogeyman is actually a really good rip-off, or kind of a mixture of kind of Carrie, Halloween, and The Exorcist, isn't it? Not The Exorcist, but that it's got a real mixture of supernatural slasher. It was kind of the first one that did it, isn't it? I think so. It's kind of quite groundbreaking. So I definitely say it's definitely worth seeing.
Mm. Yep, definitely. Okay. I would say.
Cool. Okay. Right. anything else you want to say on that, Eric?
No, don't think so.
No. Okay. Mm. Right. Well, Joseph, what's your number one?
Well, I would have kicked myself if I didn't pick Billy from Black Christmas as my number one, considering it's my favorite slasher film. I also think Billy is my favorite killer of all slasher films, because he's kind of the anti-Michael Myers, whereas Michael Myers is all quiet and off in the shadows. Billy, too, is, you know, pretty much in the shadows, but he's definitely not quiet. He's really, you know, schizophrenic. You know, he doesn't have any lame one-liners. His brain is just kind of a fried mess. He just, you know, spouts out nonsense and gibberish. And I find that really frightening in the dark, kind of shadows of the whole sorority house. And the fact that you never, spoiler alert, the fact that you never find out who Billy is, or you never really get to see his face or anything, I find that, you know, infinitely more terrifying than someone ripping off a mask and explaining why they did it. Although, you know, I do love that whole ripping off a mask and Scooby-Doo type ending. I think, you know, never revealing who Billy is in Black Christmas is just a masterstroke of genius. And he really is a terrifying, you know, villain. So that's my number one.
Mm. No, very good pick.
Yes.
Very good pick. We talked about it before, haven't we? It's kind of how he was one of the old school, the link between the old school killers and the kind of the new silent ones like Michael Myers, because he has quite a lot of Michael Myers' moves before him, obviously, but also has that whole kind of ranting maniac, you know, insanity that you would have had, the audiences would have expected with kind of mad killers from before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mm-hmm. Excellent.
And he has the world's scariest eyeball.
Yes. Yeah.
He does.
He is going to be on my arm soon, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we've mentioned that, have we, on the podcast? You've got You've got a collage.
I'm working on a collage of tattoos for my right arm. I had two old, really old tattoos, and I was like, you know what? I've had these for almost 20 years. It's time to get them covered up with something I like. So I'm doing a whole horror movie, slasher movie, kind of sci-fi collage on my right arm.
Mm. So you have
Billy will be there. Billy will be there with the glass unicorn.
What about Dana Kimmel?
Well, if I can find room, maybe, but I don't know.
Crazy Fat Ethel?
No, she wouldn't fit.
On your arse, she would. No.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I don't know. I don't have a big arse. It's not teensy, but it's just kind of normal. I don't know if she'd fit.
She'd fit in my arse.
Sure. Well, then you get it. Then you get the tattoo.
You could have Crazy Fat Ethel on one arse and Crazy Fat Ethel 2 on the other.
I only have one arse. I think you're referring to cheeks. Yeah,
cheeks. Yeah.
And then you could frighten the neighbours. That can be one your naked killing spree.
Yeah.
That would put the fear of for whatever into people, wouldn't it? So
it would indeed.
It would. So, Nathan, do you have anything to say about Billy?
I forgot we were talking about Billy. I thought we were talking about Crazy Fat Ethel and Eric's arse.
He got excited for a moment there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't...
No, I have nothing more to say. Billy is great.
Okay, great. Well, actually, Nathan, it's your turn anyway, so what's your number one?
I went with a very obvious choice. I went with Leatherface because he is the greatest killer in the greatest movie ever made.
Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Well, I'm not going to go with the one in Texas Chainsaw 3D. I think I'm going to go for the one in the 1974 version. Mm. I think he's a little bit more creepier. I love the way Leatherface is introduced, you know, like Kirk, you know, running into the house and then just the Leatherface just appears in the doorway. I thought that was a really well done shot. And I mean, he's a very menacing screen presence. I mean, I can't imagine having somebody chasing me in the middle of the night with a chainsaw.
Yes, yes. We you're breaking up a little bit there, Nathan. It's not too bad, but just in case, I think you've got gist of that.
Mm. Yeah. One thing I like about Leatherface is he's, you know, like Nathan said, he's kind of brutal and he's just a menacing screen presence. But, you know, he's kind of like he's sort of like the Bubba from Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. And he's almost, I wouldn't say sympathetic, but, you know, since he's so simple-minded, you kind of understand that he's just doing this because, you know, he doesn't really know any better. I think that's kind of unique.
I mean, I really like it. You know, I'm not a massive fan. I think Texas Chainsaw is a great film, and I do enjoy watching it from time to time. But you know, I think my heart belongs to Michael and Jason over Leatherface, if I'm honest.
I would agree. Yes,
but I do.
Mine's Billy over all of them.
I know. But I can see why you go for it. I mean, it's such a, you know, I just kind of trying to think back what kind of effect that would have had on audiences back in '74. Because it's been so overdone now, hasn't it? And, you know, to the point of ridiculousness with the latest film. And also a lot of the sequels aren't... I mean, I really liked Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, but I'm not that keen on any of the other sequels, really. But I know you are, Nathan.
Oh, yes.
And it's different, you know, different strokes, isn't it, for everyone. But a worthy number one. Anything else you want to say about that?
I just wanted to say, as far as the sequels goes, it's interesting that Leatherface always finds these crazy families to hang out with.
Mm.
Especially like in part 3 and then part 4.
I think they're supposed to be the same family, but they just keep having different members. I mean, maybe he's got this extended family who show up every time one of them gets killed. They're like, well, we'll take the place.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that Leatherface's parents didn't use duplicated rubbers, and that's why they had so many kids.
The continuity in those films is not very, very good, especially in Texas Chainsaw 3D. Boy.
Yeah.
But there's continuity in that? I don't remember any of that. Right, well, thank you, Nathan. As the madness of Boarding House approaches, my number one is a little left field, I kind of guess, but I'm going to go with Sheila Keith in Frightmare, and Pete Walker's Frightmare, the film which is, well, exactly the same time, actually. It's 1974 as Texas Chainsaw. And I just love that the having a little old lady, a kindly little old lady, with a giving people lobotomies with a drill, electric drill, and carving out their brains and eating them. I just think I just love that kind of you know, juxtaposition, really, of a kind of a lovely little old lady who's talking about squirrels being her little friends 1 minute, and then becoming a giggling monster the next. And I am aiming to do some Pete Walker films on the podcast at some point in the future. But yeah, that's my number one killer. It's kind of a bit out of left field. But as we're not doing Jason, Freddy, and Michael, I thought it might make an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, any thoughts on that?
My favorite middle-aged lady or old lady character is still Mrs. Voorhees, I have to say.
Fair enough, yes.
Mm. But I do like Sheila Keith as well.
Sheila Keith is phenomenal in Frightmare.
She is. She's fantastic in everything she's in. She just adds that, she's just got that way of being really creepy and being really sweet and then sort of really creeping you out the next moment, which I just think is, and apparently she was a lovely, lovely old dear. Mm. So, but yes, that was my number one. So if we haven't got anything else to say, then I think it maybe it's time to get on to the main attraction. Nathan, should we do it? Okay, well, here is the trailer for 1982's Boarding House.
On September 18th, 1972, the Hoffman House was closed due to several mysterious deaths. The house was reopened as a boarding house. And the body count continues. I wonder who will be next to check out of the boarding house. Boarding house. Where the rent won't kill you. But something else will. Boarding House. In Horror Vision.
Resembling a cross between the Amityville Horror and a Playboy Playmates video, this film tells the terrifying tale of a cheesy video special effect that stalks bikini-clad women. In between scenes of them playfully splashing each other and wrestling with each other's bathing suit tops, they're murdered and/or terrorized by horrific hallucinations. These hallucinations include seeing blood in the shower stalls while they're trying to lather up, having giant monsters jump out of the hall closet, and seeing their faces temporarily turn into rubber Halloween masks. I took that from the IMDb because I thought it was a rather fitting plot description for the film. I have to say, I've always loved Boarding House. I think it is very, very funny. It's really out there with some of the outlandish scenes. And, and it's got some awesome fashion, which I'm sure at least caught Eric's attention.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Fashions or lack of fashions.
Lack of fashions.
It's the best underpants esque movie I've ever seen. It's just wall-to-wall underpants.
it's a crazy film, just because, I mean, it's so strangely put together. Like, I think the editing for it is very weird. I mean, you have the two rivals in the house, Victoria and Pam, and apparently they kind of have this relationship where they hate each other. And there'll be a scene where, you know, Victoria finds out that Pam screwed her over and she's very angry at her. And then, like, a scene later, all the girls are hanging out and Victoria and Pam are both there and they seem fine with each other. And then a scene after that, you know, Victoria's still mad about something that happened earlier.
I'm like, the editing is just kind of all over the place with this movie. And, you know, the acting. Oh, my God, the acting in the film. It's unbelievable.
Nathan, can I play a little clip of
yes, please.
The acting? Just, this wasn't actually on the video I had, but it must be an extra scene, and it's the girls talking by the poolside.
How's the water?
Oh, it's great. Go on in.
No, I hope this sun shows out soon. I want to get a tan. It's too cold right now.
Hi, girls. Like to hear some of our new songs?
Oh, you guys just finished your new master, huh? I'm still working on demos.
Hi, Sumi.
Hi. Good morning, ladies.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. Aren't you hot in those pants?
A little. I certainly don't need a tan.
Gloria, how'd your date go last night? Do politicians do more than just talk?
Stephen Mason. Mr. Personality is great.
Steve Mason. My father financed a couple of his campaigns. He's good looking.
Isn't he an activist?
He's as active as I could handle.
Well, why don't you bring him around here?
I like active, sexy men.
I don't recall that scene either.
It's in the extended version.
Extended version?
It's going to be coming out soon, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I read about that 2.5 hours of this.
Yes.
I'm excited. I also love Victoria, the character Victoria. She has a giant photograph of herself above her own bed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I thought that was an interesting decoration choice for her. And I love the character. I think it's Gloria. The characters are so interchangeable. I think it's Gloria who is in the shower and sees blood and tries to push the shower door open with her boobies.
Yes. And then gets turns into a cross between a pig and Bill Clinton pulling a bloody tampon out of his mouth.
Isn't it the same thing?
Well, it's kind of like this kind of weird pig mask, isn't it? And then it's got grey hair on top. And it just kind of and then pulls out what looks like a bloody tampon out of her mouth.
For no
good reason.
I thought it was a rat as well. Yeah.
Or maybe it was. Okay.
And I don't understand what this is with all the women in the house like fawning all over Jim. I mean, I don't get it. You know, but I mean, Jim. You know, he did write and direct the film, so you know.
Well, I think that's probably the clue is in the, you know, that's probably what it is, isn't it?
And you know, Joseph brought up a really good point before. He mentioned that it's funny that Jim, when he first gets to the house, he starts picturing what it's going to be like, and he just happens to picture the exact girls they're going to be living there and what they're going to be wearing
and around the pool. And in the creepiest way possible as well, isn't it? He's kind of like, oh, I wonder what it'd be like to have those lovely ladies around the pool. It's that kind of really kind of creepy sort of like.
Yeah, you know. It's going to be a real bachelor's paradise.
Yeah.
So I guess he has the gift of foresight as well as telepathy.
Boarding House is one of those movies I could just go on about forever, but I think I want to hear from Justin because you hadn't seen it before.
I hadn't seen it before. I was just thinking, I was just watching it, and I thought, talking about Jim, I just thought the whole idea that this bevy of beauties would put out an advert saying, I want beautiful women, 18 to 25, to come and stay in my apartment block for $100 a month, which I'm sure even back in 1982 must have been, you know, that's still a fair bit of money, I would imagine. So you've got all these kind of beautiful women turning up, and there's Jim looking like Marty Feldman in a thong, and they're all going, oh, isn't this marvelous? And they're just thinking it's very bizarre. But of course, Boarding House is not going for believability. And yes, I hadn't seen this film before. It's something I actually bought the Paragon Big Box release used copy when I was in New York probably about 12 or 13 years ago. So I've had it all that time and I've never watched it. And so I have mixed feelings, obviously. I think it's a soulmate with another film we've covered, which is like Doris Wishman's A Night to Dismember. It's slightly more coherent than that. And I had a good time with it. I thought it was kind of, you know, it's not a good movie by any stretch, but I think it probably knows it's not a good movie. And from what I've seen from the director and the woman who plays Victoria, it was a Calusa, they're kind of real husband and wife characters in you know, in real life. And I think, you know, without, I'm not going to go into any background now, but I think they kind of, they were going for that effect, a kind of cult movie effect. So some of it's slightly affected, essentially. But there's enough genuine, you know, what the fuck weirdness in there to make it entertaining. I think it kind of drags in the the first half an hour. But certainly when it gets to the very end, when you find out who the killer is, which I think we'll, you know, we'll spoil at some point. And I've got a great sound clip of that for a little bit later. But I also loved Victoria's scream because she sounds like a chimp laughing.
I thought that as well. And it's just never ending when she starts going.
I know. I've got a little clip here of her screaming and see if you think this sounds like a chimp laughing.
It's okay, we're here now.
Shh. What's going on?
I think she had a bad dream.
She have a nightmare, Victoria?
So, this is your special place, huh?
Yeah, my mom used to bring me here often. Jim?
Uh-huh.
Tell me more about your powers.
Okay. Oh, about that horrible dream you had in the den. Why don't you just move back to your room till Friday?
Oh, you mean the painters aren't done yet?
Sorry.
I love the fact that the special place that Victoria's mom used to take all the time was railway tracks.
Yeah.
So what was she trying to do? Was she trying to kill her? She was just saying, come on, Victoria, let's go down the railway tracks and have a chat. No, you just stand there, just wait for the Intercity Express to come through. And Victoria's dream sequence where she gets pulled into the bed and then she's running through a graveyard and being attacked by kind of dime store sort of cadavers falling out of graves. And then it's really bizarre. But then she wakes up screaming and just to save your sanity, I only had a little bit of the screaming there, but she screams for a full minute, doesn't she? She does three full gasps of air and just sounds like a chimp laughing for three full minutes. And it's hilarious. I also love her yogurt facial as well.
That's so funny.
Her yogurt bukkake moment, where she opens the fridge and all this yogurt flies out and splatters her like some Japanese strange sex tape. And then you actually see, like a bukkake video. And then you actually see almost someone chucking a yogurt pot at her. And then she to save face, she rubs it in. So yes, I won't. I'll give other people a chance, but I mean, there's plenty to say about this movie.
And Eric, I don't think you've seen it before either.
I had not seen it either. No, and Justin said a lot about what I was going to say. It gave me the exact same vibe watching this as I did with Night to Dismember. It belongs to that small elite group of films that are just completely WTF. I won't use any swear words because I've been given out to already today. You know, it mingles in those same circles as Doris Wishman, or maybe it's probably a even more whacked out version of something like Skullduggery. So it's an acquired taste, but if you have a taste for that kind of cheapo 80s, really, really kitchen sink, everything but the kitchen, including the kitchen sink is what I'm trying to say, then there'll be something in it for you. And if you like Malcolm McDowell lookalikes in leopard skin thongs, then this is the film for you, because every 5 minutes, the star of the film, who I can't remember his name, but I call him Malcolm McDowell because I think he's a dead ringer, is prancing around in his leopard skin underpants. I just love the fact that he goes to his office. I don't really understand what he does for a living, but he sits in his office on his desk, cross-legged in his underpants, making things levitate. I don't quite understand why he has to take off all his clothes, but he does. at every available opportunity. If there is, if I do have a problem with the film, it's probably that, like Justin was saying, it's a bit too long. The film like this should really be 70 minutes, I think. Rather, and this one's pushing 100, which I think is probably its biggest flaw. But I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it. I love the scene where a girl is slicing an apple and she cuts her hand and a guy comes up and says, "Oh, what happened?" And she says, "Oh, I cut myself with the apple." I mean, the knife. And then there's another, I don't know if anyone else noticed this other one where Jim says to the girls, "Oh, why don't we all organize a party for Saturday night?" And then somebody, it's kind of in the background, says, "Yeah, a warm house party." I think she meant a housewarming party, but she fluffed her line, but they never bothered to fix it. There's also a great scene. I thought that Justin might mention this one, but where I think it's Victoria when she's caressing the cuddly toy, and
it doesn't look like a penis.
One particular part of the cuddly toy looks very phallic. Yes. Oh, it's so bizarre. You know when Pam gets her hand skewered on the ice pick? Is it my imagination, or do they go outside and bury the ice pick in the garden?
They did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did they explain why, or did I miss something?
All Victoria says is, "I hate ice picks," and then she buries it.
Well, I think maybe
they were
because,
trying to make her look, you know, suspicious. Yeah. But instead, it was very nonsensical.
Well, she does. When she's practicing her her levitation skills, she does do the same breathing techniques as we hear at the start when the nurse hands over those papers, and she looks like she's in a hypnotic trance. Mm. And you hear this breathing. How does it go? It goes. Yeah. That's it. So, I mean, the main framework of the film has a kind of cohesive story to it, but it's just what fills in that framework is just completely bonkers. So it is probably, as Justin said, slightly more cohesive than A Night to Dismember, but only slightly. And I'm intrigued to know what Joseph thinks of the film, because if anyone's going to enjoy it more than us, it's him, because it's just absolutely wall-to-wall boobies in it. Boobies on the beach, boobies by the pool, boobies in the shower, just boobies, boobies, boobies everywhere. So Joseph was probably in his element with this. He probably would like to see this 2.5-hour cut that allegedly is in the pipeline. But no, well, I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it, I have to say. Yeah.
Well, Eric, I'll have to... yes, I do like wall-to-wall boobies, you know, as much as any other hetero guy. But I didn't really find any of the women in this film very attractive. I thought they were kind of skeezy looking. And I guess kind of fit him.
What's skeezy?
Skanky.
Mean?
Skanky, oh, trashy. Skanky.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it kind of fit in with the tone of this film, but no, I saw Boarding House for the first time, like, God, it must have been 20 years ago, and I hated it. I mean, I literally rented it from somewhere, I don't remember where, but I ejected it, and, you know, I was like, okay, I cannot believe I wasted my money on this. But then I just started watching it for some reason over and over, well, not over and over, but I'd watched it a couple more times, and it just gets funnier, so... It's kind of like Nail Gun Massacre. That's a movie that I watched and hated, but I grew to love it so much. And I feel the same way about Boarding House. I like Nail Gun Massacre a lot more, but I think Boarding House has a lot of, you know, great laughs. And I think a lot of those laughs, you know, unintentionally, they hinge on the whole Jim character and how he's like you said, Eric, on Facebook, you said there's no trouser budget for this film. He's just constantly in his underwear, and it's just so distracting. And you said he looked like Malcolm McDowell. I always thought he looked like Anne Murray, David Bowie, and a monkey had like a menage a trois, and he was what came out.
That's not a compliment.
No. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's so just bizarre, and just it doesn't make much sense at all. And I think the whole story is just kind of, you know, played and kind of dull. But the whole, you know, bonkers throw in this, throw in that is what makes the film so, you know, fun to watch. Although I hesitate to call it a film considering it was shot on video. But I love Jim's, like, inner monologues and how he pictures everything's going to turn out. And, of course, that's how it turns out. And he has this whole strict no pet policy. And late in the film, a girl shows up after the house has pretty much been rented to everyone. And she's like, "I need a place to stay." So, you know, she, for some reason, she's so enamored by all this that she's willing to be stuck in the storage closet. And then that's pretty much where she ends up. I guess, you know, Jim is that, you know, Jim and his, you know, bevy of beauties is that appealing to her that she would, you know, sacrifice comfort just to stay there.
And also, yeah, but no boys allowed on the first floor.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's Jim's rule probably because, yeah, you know, he wants to be the only one there. So yeah. It's all Jim all the time. I always bring this up to Nathan. I mean, every time we go running or we go, you know, hang out with Greg or anytime this movie comes up, we always mention how self-indulgent this movie is. I mean, Jim is basically, you know, he's making the two top characters, him and the Victoria. And I think, you know, they're married in real life, so why wouldn't he? But we get a crack, you know, we laugh at the whole bit at the very end where it's all said and done. It's like, these two characters went on to loftier heights. Jim is now a respected NASA technician, and she's hot RCA property. And if you listen to her music, I'm sure you can understand why.
33 1/3.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Same for bands.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 33 1/3 of insanity.
But, one question I did want to ask, and because with the special effects budget wasn't massive, but how did he make that soap go around in the bath?
I don't want to know.
Because there's a scene in the film where Jim's in the bath and Victoria goes in to talk to him, and he's talking about levitating and sort of special powers, and then he says, look at this, and this block of soap kind of moves around on top of the bubbles.
My imagination, if I were to be serious for a moment, I'd say it was probably someone underneath the tub with a tube, and they had like a toothpick stuck in the soap and they were just twisting it around. But in movie land, I don't want to know how he moved that soap. I want to erase that scene from my memory. I like how she's like, you can make it move with your mind. Is she talking about the soap or is she talking about
that's how he made it move.
Yeah. But
Oh, go ahead, Joseph.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, Boarding House is a lot of fun. It's so awful. I mean, If you're looking for a movie that's, you know, a good slasher film, this is not it. You know, like Nail Gun Massacre, Pieces, Night to Dismember, you will laugh if that's what you're looking for. So, yeah, thumbs up from me, Boarding House, thumbs up.
You know, I was thinking about Justin playing that dialogue and like some of the dialogue in the movie. I mean, I love the scene at the end at the party when the one woman is talking to the other and she goes, hey, Cindy. And the girl goes, it's Sandy. And the woman goes, well, your name's been Cindy ever since I came here. Like she's telling her what her name is. And the acting, I was thinking about, like, the worst actor in the movie to me is the guy that played the rapist ex-boyfriend. When he comes back to see the girl and like they go into that little sitting area and he goes, hey, what's this gun? And
it's very
gun that's
it reminds
lying
me of,
on the coffee table.
It reminded me of the guy in Terror at Ten Killer.
Josh.
Hey, Leslie.
Yeah.
It's like, hey babe, you and me got some problems. We gotta talk. We gotta work some things out.
They went to the same acting school.
I think they did.
Which is to say nowhere.
Yeah. And I love Jim's way of comforting her, like later on when the gun goes off and almost kills her. Jim runs in and he goes, what was wrong? Were you playing with the gun? She's like an adult. I mean, he's acting like she's some little kid.
Well, there's a scene later where Victoria is screaming in the bathroom and he walks in with Deborah, and their response to comfort or their method of comforting her is, have some pizza. Go on, darling, have some pizza.
One thing that I was kind of curious about is later in the film when the cat or a dog? It's a cat, isn't it? That gets killed.
Pumpkin cat
dies and then she runs out to the train tracks and Jim's chasing after her. How come he was actually clothed then? Why wasn't he in his underwear? It's kind of inconsistent with his character.
His shirt was open, wasn't it? Yeah.
And they do it's kind of inconsistent with Jim. He doesn't care where he's at. He should be naked or half naked all the time.
Well, do you think he wrote the line where one of them goes, oh, you've got a lovely body, Jim?
I know, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. But I have a Jim-related question for you. Go ahead, Nathan, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, when she says you've got such a lovely body, isn't he going, mm-hmm, you know, like agreeing with her?
Yep.
Why wouldn't he? He does have a lovely body.
What do you think about his hair?
Oh, God.
Yeah, and his earring.
Yeah, his earring. He's got that kind of like that helmet hair almost.
Yeah.
Well, it was 1982, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he does, like, when he's wearing clothes, he wears a kind of pale blue shirt and a pink tie. He looks like something from Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then one scene where he's wearing a cowboy hat.
Ooh, nasty.
Yeah, I don't understand these women wanting to stay there if it were someone like Tom Selleck or something in the 80s, but why are they so attracted to Jim? And,
I think I figured it out. I think what? I know why. If you remember the scene on the beach, Jim takes one of the girls out on the beach and hypnotizes her to have sex with him. And if you remember, the black gloved hand takes a rock and bashes the back of Jim's head, and the girl sits up and goes, "What the hell did you do that for?"
I have a Jim related question for you three.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And I guess it would be suiting considering you were the opposite of me, but would you? For any amount of money?
No.
Ew.
But he's so attractive and people love him.
How much money?
$1 million.
Okay, maybe then.
Yeah, for $1 million.
I need the money.
No, Eric and I were talking. Eric seems to think this movie would be a lot better if it were called Boarding Hoskins and Bob Hoskins was the gym character.
Yeah, it would.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I'd watch 2.5 hours of it then.
He'd be like, yeah, I can just imagine all those hot numbers by the pool.
Uncanny. Wow, what an impression.
What was the, deal with the...
I can't remember what Bob Hoskins sounded like. I haven't seen Roger Rabbit in like years.
The gardener that had the kind of bizarre sort of...
That was Jim. That's the same actor.
Same actor, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, he's multi-talented. He could play several different roles.
Did anyone think that it was kind of odd that Jim, with all these bevy of beauties around the swimming pool, decides in the middle of a sunny afternoon to go up to bed and watch television? And he finds one of the girls hiding under his duvet, so he shags her instead. Well,
Dallas was on. He's trying to find out who shot JR.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
And even more bizarre, her kind of seduction technique was to stand up inside the duvet cover while his back was turned. In the bit in Hell Night where he comes up under the carpet and then goes back down. And then so he doesn't see it at all. So she's trying to seduce him, but she decides she's going to try and scare him first.
Yeah.
And then he says, "What about my movie?" Doesn't he? He's more interested in his movie than her, which is probably fair enough.
Yeah.
Did you think
at least Jim is, particular about his movies. I guess he likes horror films like us. So maybe, maybe he has to set a time and place for his women, just like he has to set a time and place for his movies.
Well, absolutely. And also, of course, Boarding House is probably the first and only slasher movie to feature a pie fight.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's like Three Stooges territory.
Yeah, yeah.
I kept expecting Mo to come out and say, "Why you?"
I've got a little clip of the... Are we going to spoil the end? Because there is...
Yes.
Surprisingly.
Yes, shall I spoil it.
Play. This is a clip of the ending. Nathan, do you want to say who the killer is?
The killer is Debbie, the British woman Debbie. Who lives at the house.
No!
And here's a little bit of her freak out at the end.
An E-man there.
See, Daddy.
Wow.
And it is the classic saying where her hair gets huge.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It does get very big.
Yeah. I like how they're
having
this, this battle of the minds of telepathy, and he's like, he's got that snarled look on his face, and she's like breathing. It's just so outlandish.
Yeah,
it does bring in a darker element to the film, though, insinuation that Deborah had an incestuous relationship with her father.
Yeah,
it's kind of serious.
Maybe,
considering
maybe that's why she's attracted to Jim, because she has daddy issues, and she was touched in the wrong places.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's kind of... It is
why else would you be attracted to Jim if you didn't have some kind of mental problem?
Yeah, true.
Oh, Joseph.
Did you guys, since you just watched this recently, did you guess who the killer was before it got to the ending?
No, but I think
no.
It's pretty, the only
I was just trying to think. I just kept saying, like, what's going on now? Who's that? Who's she? Yeah.
The only I thought it might have been her
from the get-go, because when she shows up and she keeps having these weird facial expressions and she keeps going, so why wouldn't she be the killer?
And then, like, there's a scene where the gardener approaches her with a chainsaw. And she stands up and stares him out of it, basically using her telepathic skills to make him go away or something.
Yeah. And doesn't she do lots of gardening as well? And
yes, she
says,
does.
Why are you gardening?
Well, she's
going
to kill people, but she wants the place to look nice.
Exactly, yes.
She also tries to drown one of the girls for splashing her and then gets her top ripped off in return.
And that never happened to Jason or Michael.
No.
So far. Maybe they could do that in the next Texas Chainsaw movie, though, couldn't they?
They need to make a boarding house 3D.
Oh, my God, could you imagine?
All those boobs in 3D. Yeah.
Did you like the scene where the guy gets electrocuted?
Oh, well, they shine.
They shine a flashlight in his mouth.
Yeah, to make it look like it's, yeah.
Did anyone notice the scene where 33 and a third turn up for the party and somebody arrives in a car and they've got to put the handbrake on and the car slips sort of three quarters of the way back down the drive?
Yeah, it comes out of gear. And it's like,
yeah. It's all these like little things like where a normal film would say, okay, we'll redo that. But this one just says, okay, carry on.
Mm. Well, I think when we get to behind the scenes, which I expect we will fairly shortly, we may shine a little bit of a light
in our mouths.
Flashlight.
Was there anything else you wanted to say, Nathan, about boarding house before we get onto a bit of background?
Before we get to background, I just wanted to say, because I have it on the background here, I love the detective with the afro, his facial expressions.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Some of the best facial expressions.
Yeah. Does he have a funny eye in real life, do you think? Or because at the end of the film, he's forced to shoot himself. He has one of his eyes goes very funny, and I'm just wondering, oh, did I miss that earlier in the film, or does he look like that normally?
Who knows?
I don't know.
One thing I wonder, I don't know if it was Justin or Eric who said it. They wondered what Jim did for a living, and I'm kind of curious about that too, because he sits in his office, you know, doing telepathy tricks. How does he afford that big house on the beach? I mean, it's a pretty big house. I mean, is his job basically just to sit in? Does he get paid to, you know, sit naked? I mean, I'd kind of like to look into that.
Yeah,
for a job.
If I could get a big house like that.
I'm good at sitting around in my pants. Yes. So if there's any job opportunities in that area.
Hire me.
Yes.
I can do the breathing thing, too.
Mm.
It's all the Lamaze, yoga classes I've been taking.
I've been taking Lamal classes.
Lamal classes.
The Lamal wig. Yeah. You have the wig.
I do.
Touching yourself, singing Too Shy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I do. I'm not even going to argue. I do.
No, I can imagine.
Yes.
So
Eric is not too shy.
Not too shy, no. Mm-hmm. Nathan, is there anything else we want to say about? I mean, we can say a little bit more after we've done background, if anything comes to mind, because the film itself is such a kind of clusterfuck, isn't it, of weirdness. Yeah.
That's a good term, though. I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, clusterfuck.
Have you not heard of clusterfuck before?
No.
Hmm.
Okay. That's because I don't have a potty mouth, so a lot of these terms are alien to me.
Have you heard of that term, Jason? Joseph.
Yes, I've actually used it in a sentence.
And I have too.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Oh, poor little sheltered Eric.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when, you know, we don't hear these things in the church I go to every day, so.
Is it the church of Soapy Steve?
Yeah.
And also,
Soapy Steve, remember him, yeah.
And also, you said, Eric, you love those kind of Exorcist rip-offs where they all have potty mouths.
I do.
So I don't believe a word of it.
Yeah.
Well, then how come you don't like Rob Zombie movies?
Yeah, that's the strange thing. I don't know.
That is a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
I think there's a difference between being possessed and having a potty mouth and just having a potty mouth just for the sake of it. Yeah.
It gives you an excuse, doesn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
See, I stood up for Eric. I'm not a bully.
You're not a bully. Justin still is, though.
You're the bully. Anyway, we've had enough of that.
No, you are.
No, you are.
No, you are. But what am I? Whatever you say,
passive aggressive. I was posting images of goths on Facebook and taunting me. It's a hate
crime,
Eric.
That was Patrick from Scream Queens.
Yeah, but you've done it before.
Yeah.
Eric is a passive aggressive bully.
He is. Sitting there flexing in his pants.
Yep.
So, let's move on to some background. Nathan, what have you got for
us? I've got my winkle out and I'm waving it at you.
I can't see it.
Yeah, I know.
That's passive-aggressive. Passive-aggressive.
Right. What was that?
Yeah.
Was that your...
That was Jim.
That was Jim. Okay.
He's in the house.
He just made Eric's pants fly off.
See, Justin, you and I would be, you know, right up Jim's alley because we got a lot of pussy in our house.
That is true, yes. Mind you, Nathan, have you got any cats?
No, he does, yes, stripes.
Straps.
I have two stripes. Cats.
Yes. And how's Axel getting on with the cats?
They don't really like him. He likes them, but they don't like him.
Okay, well, they might come around. So we've got a phantom pisser at the moment in the house. There's one of the cats is pissing on our shoes. I'm not entirely sure which one it is. So it's like a whodunit. But we think we know. We've narrowed it down to, well, it could be one of four. But Argento's got a cone on his head at the moment because he got an eye injury, which is healing nicely. But I don't think he's very happy. He's been kept indoors. Captain Mannering's got cat chin acne. And
cats get acne?
They do on their chins. But the trouble is, we're trying to pin him down to put some hippie scrub on it to treat it. But we did that today and it ended up in lacerations and stuff. So that's not good. The other two could be secret pissers, but we're not sure. So
I feel bad for Justin. He's getting his shoes tinkled all over. The cats here, we have like, you know, puppy pads so the dogs can go on the pads. And the cats, if they somehow can't get to their litter, they can go on the pads. And I don't know if it's the dogs or the cats, but they'll go right beside the pad on the hardwood floor. I think they do it just to, you know, annoy me because I have to clean it up.
Mm.
It's like a kind of a bladdery version of eyeball.
It is. Well, I'll tell you how it plays out, but hopefully...
Yeah. Are you having to go shoeless, Justin?
Well, yeah. No. I just put them through the washing machine. They've been drying in the sun, but hopefully tomorrow I'll go back to the vets because we went to the vets the other day. And she tried to charge me £450,000 at the vets because she put in too many noughts into the machine. It's not far off.
You published author, you.
Isn't that only like $400 in American or whatever?
Ooh.
Well, I'm gonna.
I don't know. I seriously don't know. I don't know anything about pounds and francs and sixpence or whatever you call it or quid.
Well, I
have no knowledge of the conversion rate. So,
well, I'll tell you what, I got my latest statement for my book through, and now I am £3.11 away from paying off my advance. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny that it's kind of funny that you mentioned. I mean, it's funny that your book is so popular, and yet you're just basically kind of getting back to even now.
Yeah. But then
I wouldn't call it funny. I mean, it's
hilarious.
I wouldn't call it funny, but it's
Joseph.
Just kind of.
No, I know, but I'm not bitter. It was publishing; it was the main thing I did. But it's just it is bizarre. But I might make £5 or £10 off it in the end. So we'll see.
But you changed a lot of people's lives, and that's all that matters.
Yeah,
I touched a lot of people, which is good. So,
background, finally.
Background, yes. Who wants to go first? Nathan, it's your pick.
I will go
what
first.
Have you got for us?
Well, like I said, the budget was approximately $10,000. Movie was shot in about 2.5 weeks. Horrorvision was basically a throwback to the gimmicks that William Castle would use in the past. Boarding House played at theaters. Surprised. Let's see, what else do I have here? There was talk about making a boarding house part two, which would be awesome if they did.
Is that still being bandied about, or is that was that back in the day when it hit number one?
It was. They said it on the Code Red DVD.
Right.
They also said on there that the film once played on the AMC channel, which, you know, over here in the States, the AMC channel was American Movie Classics. So how do you like that?
Well, that is bizarre, isn't it?
Yes.
Don't AMC do Walking Dead as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did. They do.
Okay.
And Breaking Bad.
Mm.
They also played House of Death.
Wow.
No, that was A&E.
No, but AMC did too.
They did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But A&E was the one that played it like all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the background that I have.
Okay, right.
I have a little bit here.
Okay.
Well, Boarding House was also known as Hausgeist and Bad Force. And let's see, the idea for the project was developed by Elliot Van Kobe. I want to say it's, the G-H is silent. It was a result of an article he read in American Cinematographer. The article mentioned that George Lucas was experimenting with producing films shot originally on video. Van Kobe approached Wintergate with the idea of producing a low-budget horror film on video, reserving the major portion of the budget for the expense of making the transfer to film. Wintergate, who plays Jim, he funded the project and wrote the script. And as an assistant casting director in Hollywood, Van Kobe had extensive experience with video equipment. It was he who chose the camera and under an alternate name of Obi Ray, shot most of the admittedly cheesy special effects sequences. Boarding House is notable for being the first horror film to be shot on video. And, of course, the film uses that movie gimmick titled Horror Vision where, you know, something, a warning would pop up on screen. Of course, you kind of know that from there. And despite being shot on video, the movie was transferred to film and given a limited release theatrically, like Nathan said, by Coast Films in 1983. And then it was later released on VHS by Paragon. And that's all I have on it.
Okay. Thank you, Joseph. What about you, Eric? Have you got anything?
Okay. Well, I only have two small bits. John and Kalasu Wintergate are now internationally known as Lightstorm. And I think they're kind of a multimedia enterprise. It says here on their website, and I'm quoting this verbatim, it is, they have devoted their entire lives to singing and bringing joy to people all over the world. by the constant practice of controlling and silencing the mind, they have connected with the ultimate truth of many aspects of this creation. So they're a bit new worldy, new agey, I think. Mm. And that's, you know, even back when they were making Boarding House, they had an interest.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I can definitely,
yes. Yeah. The only other, one other thing. You were saying it was released theatrically. I read somewhere, but I can't recall where, that the theatrical version was slightly shorter. They got rid of the pie fight sequence, apparently. Yeah, and as we were saying earlier in the podcast, there is a 2.5-hour cut of the film apparently coming to DVD. It's on the Wikipedia page, but it was supposed to be out in May, so I haven't heard anything, you know, of it appearing. Lindsay Freeman, she plays Debbie, and she's credited in the film. Well, the actress is credited as Alexandra Day. She posed nude for the January 1976 issue of the US edition of Penthouse magazine. And her photos caused quite a stir at the time because she looked quite young. So, Joseph, you like young girls, so maybe you can dig out.
No,
the
I do not.
Genuine. I do not like girls. I was only joking. Oh my God, I'm going to get you into trouble.
That's Greg. Greg is the pedophile of our group.
You can't say things like that.
Yes, I can. Greg is a pedophile.
Okay.
Well, he's not really a pedophile, yeah, but he's like almost 40, and he tends to like 21-year-old girls, so.
Nice.
Well, which is legal, but still young.
All straight men are like that, though.
Mm.
Not me. I like the older women.
Oh. What, like Susie?
The aged fine wine.
Well, like Susie.
Oh. I'm watching the film is on in the background here, and it's I forgot to mention, I love the bitch fight at the poolside. I'm going to shove your fucking teeth down your throat or something. I don't even know what the fight is about. It's one of the, what, some woman is looking at some guy's boyfriend or some girl's boyfriend, is it? Or
it,
you know,
like
the scene
that,
I mean?
It?
It's yeah. Pam is shouting at somebody. Mm. It's great. It's pure dynasty. But as far as background information, that's all I have, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, you're funny. You're sort of saying Susie's like fine wine, Joseph, and Toy is more trampane.
Oh, you shut your filthy, you shut your bitchy mouth.
Toy is more like a Pabst Blue Ribbon type.
What's
of
that?
Person. It's like a really nasty beer.
Oh, Joseph,
you're
how could
so
you?
So horrible to me. And there was, when you rang earlier on Skype, I sang a little bit of Mirage by Susie and the Banshees for you.
I know, I know.
Thanks,
Eric.
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, Toy is like a fine Chardonnay.
Toy is like Coke Zero with Captain Morgan's rum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Delicious.
She's like chocolate milk.
Mm. She is. She's like Mars Bar milkshake.
Good going in, bad coming out.
Oof. Okay, yeah. Well, let's move on. Yeah, I've got. Did you know that John Wintergate and Calusa had another slasher movie connection?
Really?
No.
Mm. They were both in Terror on Tour.
Really?
Yes. Huh? Well, according to IMDb, they played Mod Girl and Mod Boy in Terror on Tour from 1980. So, I mean, I'm not sure what that's, you know, what that...
See, I'm trying not to remember Terror on Tour. So
is
that's
it,
probably why
is,
I
it, is Terror on Tour better or worse than Boarding House?
Well, better probably. Made. I wouldn't say as entertaining.
No. It's boring, is it, or something?
Yeah. Now... A couple of other bits I've got is that the boyfriend, the rapist boyfriend, Richard, was played by Brian Brundlin, who was a stunt double on the Amityville Horror. So it's all the higher echelons of people. The old guy who Joel Reardon, who died, the film's actually dedicated to him. He, do you know the old guy, the one who's playing golf and he falls over?
Yeah. Yeah, hilariously falls over, yeah.
And he always seems to be drunk, probably because he was drunk, I don't know, but he died the same year. You'd have to be in this film, yes. Mm. The only other thing I've got that hasn't already been covered is... Oh, actually... oh, well, this is what it says, and I read somewhere that it was the people who made it had previously done Porn, but I haven't seen that anywhere else. So someone said it was similar in that way to The Prey, but I don't think that is necessarily true.
I can almost see that though.
Mm. Well, it does. It plays out a bit like a porno, doesn't it? It's there's a great comment on IMDb, and someone's put shot on video poltergeist slasher made by New Agers. How can you pass on that? Which I think is. Probably fair to say it's true. Now, just to give some idea of what they were actually going for, in the book Nightmare USA by Stephen Froer, there's a brief little interview, or not an interview, but like a little block of text from John Wintergate and star Calusa from the film. And he wrote to him after seeing, he reviewed it, and... he says, let's just see what it was. He says, we meant it to be sort of cult-orientated, far out and over the top, tongue-in-cheek, outrageous and insane comic spoof of the horror film genre. So a lot of what they did was, you know, it's definitely they were doing it on purpose. And apparently, it says at the bottom, it was released alongside Jaws 2. But I thought Jaws 2 came out in 1978. But
it did. So I saw that interview as well, and I was wondering if maybe they meant Jaws 3, which would have been out in 83.
I would imagine that's probably what he meant, isn't it?
That would have to be it, yeah.
That would be a great double bill, because I love Jaws 3.
I do too. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he also says about the acting, he says, we asked a few of our fellow acting friends to work with us to make it all happen, and it was quite a challenge to have some of them come off the way they did, but we all had fun working on the project, and said we did use a few ad libs that happened throughout the filming when they were really strange or came off even naive or stupid feeling. And he says the metaphysical aspect in the film was meant to give it a deeper scope somehow and also make it more emotionally intricate as well as a bit more crazy. So it's kind of, I it all works together. I think it kind of had to come up with a completely incohesive whole, but it's still a very entertaining movie. And it's the kind of film that would be really good, I imagine, to see with a big group of people in a cinema. Because apparently, I did read somewhere that they said that they saw it and a very drunken showing one night in a group with a lot of genre fans, and that apparently it was a real hoot. So I imagine it would be. But I must admit, I don't believe I could sit through a 2.5 hour version of this. That's all.
It would take multiple sittings, I think. Maybe watch an hour at a time, or
yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
could do it.
Yeah, well, you know that clip I played earlier of the girls talking around the pool? It wasn't in the version I saw, the Paragon tape. Was that in the version you've seen, Nathan?
No.
And Joseph? It wasn't?
No,
it wasn't. So that must be extra, because if it's just lots of inane dialogue, then it might be quite funny, if that's all the extra stuff is. Because I imagine they wouldn't have cut out any of the gore or anything like that, would they? Because they would just put it all in. So... Okay, well, Nathan, do you have anything else to say about Boarding House before we move on to some feedback?
First of all, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I was breaking up some. I just wanted to say that I think it's hilarious how random girls just show up throughout the film.
Yes,
that was very, very succinct. Closing yes. statement there. And that's okay. Has anyone else got anything to say, or should we move on to some feedback? All I would like to say, it was a very Nathan-esque
pick. It was pure Nathan. And we've watched
yes. definitely Nathan.
Nathan did mention the fact that they're stalked by a dodgy video effect, which appears sort of not that often in the film, but the entity is sort of displayed as a kind of a video generated blob on screen.
Yeah, I found
it's
that
like
quite...
a Commodore 64 effect or something.
Yeah,
I found or that like quite creepy the first time I saw
it. A Wang computer or whatever.
You thought what, Justin? Sorry,
I found it a little bit creepy the first time I saw it.
Did you?
I don't know why, because then every other time it doesn't look creepy. I just that kind of just that blob.
Maybe you were sober.
Maybe I was sober. Yeah, it didn't last.
Yeah,
long.
We're most people say maybe you were drunk. For Justin's, maybe you were sober.
Justin, can I ask on the print you watch, could you read the text scroll at the start? Because I couldn't read it in mine. It was all blurred.
I could. But the tape I've got is from 1986. And the first 5 minutes, the sound quality was really low. I really had to turn up. You know, sometimes you get with VHS, when you get it starts playing really quietly and just really crank up the volume just to hear it. And you know that any moment it's suddenly going to switch back to loud, which it did, of course. And did anyone else like the kind of the computer typing effect that went on for 5 minutes?
I know. And the
kind of reminds me of Shadows Run Black.
Mm.
They did the same thing, although I think theirs was like a lot worse.
So, do we have anything else left to say, or shall we move on to some feedback?
Well, the body of Debbie was missing at the or Deborah, sorry, was missing at the end of the film, so. You know, there still is room for Boarding House 2 if anyone wants to make it, and I think that person should be Nathan.
Well, I was just going to say, the hysteria continues. Where watching movies won't kill you, but Nathan's picks will.
Oh, that's mean. Now you're bullying Nathan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're all Nathan. Still alive.
Yeah. And also, let's not forget, John and Calusa could be listening to the show, because obviously it looks like they would have checked out, and they're going to be on a new commentary on the 30th anniversary edition, whatever's coming out. So they'll hear everything you said about them, Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph.
So you might suddenly find yourself levitating or bleeding from your orifices.
I hope I do. Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Running into the sea and collapsing.
Yes.
I don't live near an ocean. I live near a river, but
well, maybe run into one of your dog pads and fall face down. Yeah.
Well, that'd be fine because they don't use the dog pads; they use the floor.
Okay, right. Well, without further ado, then, thank you, Nathan, for the clusterfuck that was Boarding House. If you'd like to write into the show and let us know what you thought of it, then please do, because we'd love to hear from you. We've got a little bit of feedback coming up, but if you'd like to contact the show, this is how you can.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay. We have a voicemail. Shall I play that first?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a voicemail.
Hey, gentlemen. This is Brett. I'm sorry I haven't called you in a while, but I've been very busy. And I just wanted to say how much I enjoyed the Predator show. And I think that this counts as a slasher. And I started to think of other movies that could count as a slasher. And I found another Arnold one, Terminator 1. Definitely not Terminator 2. That one's a little bit more friendly. But Terminator 1, you know, what's the whole plot? Just a girl and a guy running from an unstoppable killing machine, you know. It's basically a horror movie. It just happens to have that element of sci-fi with the robots and the future. But when I first saw this kid, I didn't think it was sci-fi or action. I thought it was a horror movie. I thought it was really scary, especially the ending with the fucking exoskeleton thing. So that might be a good one to do, another Arnie. All right, you guys keep doing good work, and I will call back another time. Bye-bye.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Brett. I think we'd probably agree that Terminator could be termed a slash movie, wouldn't we?
Yes.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Yes.
And Alien.
I'm still
trying to shoehorn Alien into the...
I'd say Alien. Definitely Alien is very slasher-esque.
And Dirty Dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we said about putting Baby on a machete, didn't we?
You did. I didn't.
Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you, Brett. Short and sweet. So, thank you very much. Joseph, you got another bit of feedback, haven't you?
Yeah, this is from, God, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Maya Drakenstein. I guess that's her name or his name. I don't know. Maya? I don't know. Anyway, he or she says, I'd say it's a she. Hi, guys. I'm a huge fan of the show. I was watching The House on Sorority Row and Pieces yesterday, and it struck me, both movies have a scene where a waterbed is brutally slashed and killed in quotation marks. First, from House on Sorority Row, when Vicky is in bed with her lover. It's just a really short clip in this video, but you see Mrs. Slater's cane slashing up the waterbed, and then she posted some links to YouTube, and then they say, from Pieces, where the woman is being stabbed to death on the waterbed. And then another YouTube clip. And then a friend of mine reminded me of the waterbed scene from A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. I can't think of any other waterbed massacres right now, but there has to be more of them from the 80s. Waterbeds are crap and deserve to be slashed to pieces. I just assume you guys already have a list of top 3 waterbed massacres from the 80s, and if you don't, please make one. I think that's all I can think of. But anyway, they say, thank you for hours of fun, education, and utter geekorama. That's from Maya Drakenstein, or I'll just call him Dracula.
Well, we always insult our listeners by accident. Don't
no,
we?
Usually no,
by
I love you, Maya, names. Even though I don't know who you are.
Well, no, thank you, Maya. That was, yes, we're trying to think. I can't think of any other waterbed. No.
Well, there's a whole smoking pot on a waterbed, but I don't think that really
That's
counts.
In pieces, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's in pieces as well.
I don't think the waterbed gets killed or anything.
No. Not at that moment, anyway. But
and fucking on a waterbed.
Do we have anything else?
Well, I just have one thing here from our Facebook page.
Okay.
Just you reminded me there when you mentioned House and Sorority Row. It's from Mike McCready. And he said, just started listening to your podcasts. Excellent work, guys. Just want to let you know that Mark Rosman, the writer-director of House and Sorority Row, was my professor in film school. He's a great guy, and he really knew his stuff. So that's short but sweet, but thank you for that, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed Mark a while
yes.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy. Didn't
House and Sorority Row, all those years ago.
Mm-hmm. I thought we'd read that one out.
Oh, have we?
I think so.
Oh.
But it doesn't matter. It was short and sweet.
Okay,
61 yeah. episodes. It kind of
exactly. We were yes. talking about repetition, weren't
but
we?
He did. So. He did send that mail to us on the 1st of May, so we probably have read it. So sorry, Mike. You've Well, I'm going to apologize to him. Sorry, everyone, for reading out the same thing twice.
Yes. But no, I mean, that is fine, Eric. We sort of, you know, old age creeps up on us all.
That certainly does on you.
That's already crept up and gone past. So, that was. Have we got any other feedback? Nathan, have you got anything for us?
No.
No. Okay, right. Well.
I've got one here from Mike McCready.
Oh, have you? Oh,
yeah, just
talk about Mark Rosman.
Because yeah, Joseph mentioned House and Sorority Row, and Mike just emailed us, blah blah blah, etc. Et
blah 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 blah. Right. Well, Joseph, do you want to explain what we're going to be doing after this show?
Yeah. Well, scheduling conflicts are in order, are coming right up around the corner. So,
caused by Susie. We won't.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This episode will be going out this Thursday earlier because Justin will be out of town and unable to release it on his end. So we're going to release it on Thursday. And then we won't be recording again until July 14th. But in the interim, I'm going to be releasing the Savage Water commentary we did for Savage Water, the Vinegar Syndrome DVD that got released and then recalled. So if you haven't heard it, now will be your chance to hear it.
Okay, no, thank you very much. And because we won't be announcing what we'll be covering the next time, then I think I am going to plump. And I was pondering, should I do a proto slasher? Should I do an Australian slasher? But one that we've probably been requested more than any other is Sleepaway Camp. So I think it's time we covered Sleepaway Camp on the show. For our July the 14th show. So that's coming up next time. So look forward to seeing you and hearing back from you soon. And what are you going to be playing out with, Nathan? Or Joseph?
Oh, this is the one I record. It's just the incidental music over the credits. Very electronic score.
Right. Yeah, which when I was watching it for the first time, any Depeche Mode fans among us, apart from me?
Oh, yes. Love Depeche Mode.
Yeah, they have a song called "Here Is the House" on the Black Celebration album, and for the opening music anyway, it reminds me of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's play out with that. Look, sounds like we've lost somebody.
Yes.
We just lost somebody.
Nathan.
Okay.
But I'm sure Nathan will say goodbye. We'll say goodbye now, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Somebody on here lives in a haunted house. And again, that creaking door sound. Who's there? Hello?
Hello.
I'm glad that you're back because somebody has a creaking door in their house and I was quite frightened.
That was me.
Oh, okay. I was scared. I thought it was a haunted podcast.
Eric, you need to lube it up.
Boarding house. I need to lube it up.
Yeah, you need to lube it up.
Yeah.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, that sounds like an end of the podcast thing.